Okay, Sweaty Yeti here again, sitting on, best to describe it is like a floating hotel. It's a sort of a ship with hotel rooms, a ornate lobby, restaurant, a bar, what else does it have? And it's docked next to a bunch of other similar floating hotels. I'm down here in Luxor, Egypt. So I'm going to try to just break down some of the highlights of the last couple of days here in Egypt. Some highs, a couple lows, we'll share it all here at Homies Around the World. And, so starting with kind of the arrival and first day of touring. I think I already mentioned I checked into the Valencia Hotel, and it's actually quite nice. It's comfortable. The staff are really helpful and friendly. It's in this weird building where there's like construction going on. There's other businesses in the same building, and there's like cats running around the corridors or whatever. Not the hotel corridors, but the stairwells of the building that the hotel's in. So imagine like a building where there's like different businesses in it, and the hotel is just one of those businesses, and then there's like common, I guess, like stairwells, where it's like a lot more dusty and kind of like, I'll say a little bit spooky, but it's, I don't know, it's just kind of weird. And then there's like blue LED lights and cats and little flower pots, and then there'll be just like some garbage or something. But then you open up the door to the hotel and it's all like clean and pristine and nice. And, so it's just this funny juxtaposition of the two. Anyway, I had reserved some tours, one for the pyramids in Giza, and then one for Luxor and Aswan, which is down south in southern Egypt. So the first day of the tours in Giza, I was met at 8:30 in the morning by Magit. When he first said his name, I thought he said Maggot, which kind of threw me off. But it's Magit, and it's spelled M-A-G-E-D. Anyway, super nice guy. And then his driver, Omar, or my driver, Omar, this younger guy. And both of them were just super great to hang out with for the whole day. He kind of goes into tour mode, but he's also just a genuine, funny, and just an all-around nice guy. And Omar's kind of laid back and stuff, but he's really nice too. So we got in the car, and I think, and basically the rough itinerary was, we went to Saqqara, where there's the Step Pyramid, and that's the oldest pyramid. So we started with the oldest to the newest, I believe, and kind of the grandest. So we went to the Step Pyramid. I won't bore you with all the details. You can kind of look these up, and I've got some pictures and stuff, but just some of the highlights. I guess my preconceived notion was like the pyramids are pretty touristy. I didn't know what to expect, but I just kind of had this, I had seen other people on my Facebook feed. In fact, my friend Karen from Brazil, had just gone to the pyramids as part of their trip. She was a friend that I met when on my last round the world trip. She's from Brazil. Her husband's from Venezuela, but they live in Miami. And they were doing like Greece and Egypt, but timing didn't work out. I would have loved to have met up with them, but timing just didn't work out. So I was seeing like some of their like pictures of stuff that I was going to do just, you know, days before I ended up doing it. And I'd also seen other people do the pyramids and stuff. And I guess in my mind, I just figured it was like this touristy thing where you show up in Giza and it's all surrounded by city anyway. And you just kind of go out there and you snap a few photos in front of the pyramids. And all I had in my head was the grand pyramids, the ones that there's like the three pyramids in Giza. That's all I kind of knew. But we ended up doing, I don't know if it's normal, but we ended up doing, there's these other spots to see before that. So Saqqara was the first spot with the step pyramid, and that was really cool. And there was hardly any other tourists there, and you drive in, and by the way, like, you go to an area where it's like more green. So you go towards the Nile River, and there's like one side of the Nile that's just like all green, and it's all like palm or date palms. And then the other side is just pure desert. So it's just this crazy contrast between just green on one side and desert on the other side. So we did the step pyramid, and then we did, I think I'm missing one spot. There was this other place we went to, and I'm blanking on the name. But then we went to the, there's these dual pyramids. One's called the Red Pyramid, and one is called the Bent Pyramid. So the Bent Pyramid, they started building it, and they were using the wrong angle. And then, like, midway through the construction, they corrected the angle. So if you look at it, it's got, like, two angles. It almost looks like an REI tent or something like that. It's weird. And I guess the king at the time was like, no. Like, this is effed up. Like, you got to start over again. So they started with the Bent Pyramid. The king was like, I'm not going to be entombed in there. So they built another pyramid called the Red Pyramid. The Red Pyramid was really impressive. It was, I'm trying to remember if it originally, I think it originally had, the smooth surface. I may be wrong about that. I have to go back and look at my pictures, but anyway, the Red Pyramid, you can go down inside. So you like climb up, these stairs, and then you basically go down into the tomb or whatever. And if you're claustrophobic, you probably might not want to do that. It's because it's not stairs, it's like a ramp with like little slats, so you can have your feet have something to hold on to, and then you've got little hand railings, and you have to basically go in backwards is the only way to do it, and you're bent over because it's really narrow, so you go down, I don't know how many meters, but it seemed pretty long, and I was getting a little like not wigged out, but I was just like, oh man, what is this? And as you're going down, there's like this ammonia smell that you start smelling. And then once you get down into the like burial chamber, it's super strong. It smells like pee, but it's more like, I guess there's some people think people peed down there. Some people think it's like bats or something. I have no idea what it is, but it's pretty strong. So you don't, and there's not, it's really crazy to be like, oh, I'm like down in the middle of this crazy pyramid, and the walls inside the chamber are really smooth, and they're sort of latticed or terraced, I guess. They're like sort of, it's hard to describe. I have pictures, but other than that, there's not really any interesting markings or anything. So you're like, I don't want to get trapped down here, and it smells like pee. Get me out of here. So you're just like, you go down, and then you come back up real quick, and But it was cool. I mean, I'm glad I did it. It's just, it's a trip to be inside of like a pyramid. So after that, gosh, there was a couple other places we went to, including this one. So, I'm blanking on which one it was. But basically, Magid, the guide, and Magid was great. Like he was just full of like information and showing you cool stuff and like, showing you on like hieroglyphics, what certain stuff meant. And like, you know, it tells the story of what life was like back then and everything. And, but this one place we went to, he basically hands you off to a guy that's there, and then he takes you down inside a place. It might have been this one pyramid that was basically, it hadn't collapsed, but it was basically, from the outside, it just looked like a big sand pile. Because, like, all the stones were gone. Some of these places, like, later eras, they basically, like, stripped some of the stones away to use for moss or to build. I think one place they had stripped some of the red stones to build Tahrir Square in Cairo. Anyway, long story short, the guy kind of takes inside, and Magid was really good about warning me, like, if they ask you for money, don't give them any money, or like if they're gonna come bug you and want you to buy these things, and you can just say, he gave me. So this phrase is really key to learn. It's Misha Eyes, and it just basically means I don't need it, or I don't want it, or no thank you. So I was practicing that. But I went inside this one place, and the guy, he's like basically motion. There's this sarcophagus, and he's like I don't know. He's giving me these hand motions. I'm not sure. I thought he was saying like be quiet, don't talk or something. So I'm like, okay, I won't talk. And then, but he's like, no, like get inside the sarcophagus. And I'm like, what? But he's like, you know. So I'm like, okay, this is like a secret thing. Like, get inside, but don't tell anyone. I basically figured out, he was like, hey, I'm letting you do this thing that you're not supposed to do, but just don't tell anyone, and basically give me, well, and then, so I do that, I lie in the sarcophagus, I'm like, I didn't feel comfortable about it at all, I probably shouldn't have done that, but, so I get inside, and he snaps some pictures, I'm not going to share those, but, and then when I get out, he's like, okay, now I gave you this thing, now you give me some money. And I'm like, all right, here's I go to hand him like some Egyptian pounds. And then he sees in my wallet, I've still got these leftover, euros from Greece. I've got like 60 euros, a 10 and a 50. So I'm like, fuck. All right. So I go to hand him the 10, but then he sees the 50 and he's like pointing at the 50. I'm like, no, dude, I'm not giving you 50 euros. So I ended up giving him like 200 pounds, which is like, it's like 12 bucks, but it's still a lot for them. I don't know. I felt like trapped in this situation, and I wanted to get him off my back, and I gave him 200 pounds. I felt stupid for doing it. I don't think I had anything smaller. But anyway, I just was like, all right. And he's like, don't tell anyone, you know, this is like our secret, blah, blah, blah. So I come out of the tomb, and immediately my guide's like, you have a good time? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, did you give him some money? I'm like, yeah, I gave him 50. And he's like, didn't believe me. So he goes and starts yelling at the guy, and the guy coughs up the 200. So Magid gives me back the 200, and then I guess he gave him like 50. So anyway, I felt super embarrassed because he totally probably had, you know, the same guy pulls the same scam like over and over again. Anyway, that was a lesson learned. So, and then in between, so we left that place, and in between, you know, we're like driving with Omar and Magid, and we did a couple podcasts, which I'll post, like where they're teaching me some Arabic words, and also we're like listening to some Egyptian music. I'm like, we're talking about music and stuff, and so there were some cool. I Shazammed some of the singers. What's this guy's name? Anyway, I really liked them. I'll have to find them and then post some videos of them. It was almost kind of like an Egyptian hip hop. I mean, it wasn't exactly like hip hop, but it kind of had this beat that kind of reminded me. And you know, and so we were jamming out to that, and that was cool. And then poor Omar's like data thing ran out. So it was like, I don't know if he was using like something like Spotify or whatever, but it like ran out. So we couldn't listen to music anymore. Anyway. So then we go to the final place, which is, I felt like there was more stops, but anyway, so we go to the Grand Pyramid. I know each of the three pyramids has a name, and then there's like each pyramid has three smaller pyramids, which I didn't even know, for like the queens or other high up people. So there's actually 9 pyramids there, but everyone knows the 3 big ones. And so once we get there, Magid's like, so do you like want to ride a camel or a horse or something like that? And I was like, I just wasn't thinking. I was like, oh, camel. He's like, okay, well then we'll go to this one place. So basically, the tour that I paid for didn't include, you know, camel ride. Actually, I knew that, like, you know, whatever. But I was like, whatever, it'd be fun to ride a camel. So it's stupid. But actually, it ended up being pretty fun and a really cool experience. I hope, I'll just tell the story. So basically, we go, and then there's this whole, like, negotiation that takes place with this other guy. And he kind of explains there's basically like 3 packages you do, and you can either do the long one, the medium one, or the short one. I think the short one, you just like go up to this one spot, and you just go up to the pyramids on the camel and come back, and it's pretty short. And then the other one, it's like go to the pyramids and then ride up to the Sphinx. And then the long one, or the VIP one, was you do all that plus this whole other thing where you get to see other cool stuff. And there's this cool, well, Magid, there's long, medium, and short. And then Magid said, oh, what about this viewpoint thing that's really cool? Like he totally knew what was up. And the guy's like, oh, well, that's the VIP thing. He's like, well, give him the VIP for the same price as the long. And so the guy's like, okay. And I'm sure this is, they're probably buddies and they do this same shtick over and over again, but whatever. So then Magid's like, all right, why don't you go outside and let me talk to him for a bit? So then Magid's like, look, I think what they're asking for is high. So we negotiated. So basically, we got him to come down a few bucks on the price. And whether or not that's all set up ahead of time, your guess is as good as mine. But anyway, it was just, I'm just appreciating the whole theatrics of the whole thing. So then it's time to meet the camel. And then the other guy that's going to be like taking me up there, whose name was Mahmoud. He's this young guy. He kind of has like movie star looks. Like he almost reminded me of like a Mario Van Peebles or something. And he's got this like lingo that he uses. He's like, he always ends every sentence with, like, you understand me? Or, like, you follow me? Or, you know, something like that. Like, he just kept saying that over and over again. But, so we go over and there's this little, like, corral with the camels and horses. And so he introduces me to my camel, whose name was Casanova. And it's just, you know, he looks like a camel. He's a silly-looking animal. And then he's riding this horse, and I'm like, what's the horse's name? He's like, Bob Marley. And I'm like, oh, of course. So I get on the camel, and I have ridden a camel before, but it was briefly when I was with my friend Aaron in UAE, and we went and did, like, a little desert thing where you, like, you ride ATVs and you see, like, they have a hawk thing, and then they do, like, a belly dancing show and all this stuff, and I'm sure it's all touristy, but it's super fun. And then they have, like, a whole meal. So you get to ride at that thing. We got to ride a camel for a brief. It was super short. It was, like, 5 minutes. Like, you literally get on it, the camel stands up, you walk around, you take some funny pictures, and then you get off of it. This was, like, I would say proper camel riding. I mean, we literally, the whole tour was, like, I think 2 hours or maybe a little bit more than that. So once I got on and we start walking, I'm like, and I realize how spread out everything is and how far it is. I'm like, oh, I'm going to be doing some camel riding. So, and it was actually, once you kind of get into it, you kind of get into like a little rhythm, and like, what did Mahmoud call it? The Egyptian massage. it wasn't so bad, but you're still, I don't know. You just feel like you could topple over at any time, or the camel could just take off running or whatever. Sorry, I'm just sipping my beer. You basically are just, like, out there in the desert, and there's something... So this is where I was like, oh, this is worth the money, and it doesn't... I mean, it is touristy or whatever, and I am a tourist jackass sitting on the back of a camel looking at the pyramids, and everybody's... I'm sure they're all, like, you know, whatever, but there was something pretty awe-inspiring just being in the Sahara Desert, and there is a point where you are pretty much surrounded by desert, and you're out there, and you're, you know, and it's just me and Mahmoud just talking, and he's telling me some stuff, and then we're joking around. He's telling me about the time that some tourists brought some weed and a vape pen, and they totally vaped up and, like, went out, and they just, like, hung out for, like, an hour, and were just, like, laughing and stuff. It was really cool. It was just a really cool experience, and I got to become very fond of Casanova, my camel. And you'd stop here and there, and you get off, and the whole, like, getting on and off procedure is a little, takes some getting used to. There's this one sort of spot where you take some really cool, panoramic photos, and I don't know, it didn't feel like as just wham, bam, check this thing off the list. Yeah, I've seen the pyramids. It was a cool experience, and just being up close and trying to imagine, you know, that there was at one point hundreds of thousands of people building these things and carving the stones, and the stones are like anywhere from 2 to 20 tons each. I mean, it's just mind-boggling how they did all that. There was this point of controversy. I think it first came up when I was with Magid, and we were at one of the other pyramids, and I had to ask, like, I was like, so was this built by slaves or by workers or both? And he's like, oh, this is a big misconception that there were slaves. They were all Egyptians that built them and workers. I don't know. I don't know what the truth really is. You know, who knows? But It also came up with Mahmoud. He kind of mentioned that, like, these were Egyptians that built these, and the workers were treated, you know, they were given food and shelter, and then if one of the workers died, they would get their own burial tomb. So there are these worker tombs there's like a whole complex of those nearby as well, where supposedly the workers, if they die, they would. So that was like part of the incentive, was if you died while building the pyramids, that you would get to go to heaven along with the pharaoh or the king or whatever. And then we got to go. I didn't know we could go right up close to the pyramids, but we just went up, and there's a guard sitting right there with his like AK-47. And we just like hop over the rope and then go, and you don't get to you can climb up like one step and take some pictures, and they're all cool with that. So we did that, and then came back around, and the whole thing was just a really cool experience. And we saw the Sphinx. That was cool too. So it's, I'm probably butchering this, but it's the body of, it's the face of a man, the body of a woman, and then the tail of a lion. So there's like, the man is, I don't know, each one has like a certain symbolism. And yeah, so, sorry, I'm a little light on all the historical significance and the symbology and stuff. But it is a cool experience, and if you are in Egypt, it's a must. It's definitely a must see. So that was that tour, and I thanked them, and I tipped Omar and Magid, and so then basically went back to the hotel, and they were super nice. Like, I had already basically, I had only paid for two nights in a dormitory room, but both of those nights they gave me, I had my own double bedroom to myself. And then, you know, I went and did the tour, and, they had moved my stuff from the double bedroom to a single bedroom. And I was like, can I still take a shower? And they're like, yeah, of course, go and rest, whatever. So like, I basically got to use this other room for free for a few hours, and like showered and took a rest and charged my stuff, and then had to basically got picked up by Wahid to take a all-night train ride down here to Luxor. So I posted a thing on Facebook like, yeah, you know, taking the all-night train is a super interesting experience, and I haven't even left the station yet. Well, it was just, like, Wahid seemed a little stressed about time and everything. Oh, and then I should mention that this day that I was doing the tour and we were driving around was, like, a holiday, and all the police, like, seemed like all the police in the city were out with these checkpoints and like clearing, like blocking certain streets or whatever. I think they were anticipating a demonstration, and then I guess apparently the Muslim Brotherhood was they were threatening to make trouble, whatever that means. And so they just had like police out in force. And so it's actually like driving around Cairo was nice, because it was like a holiday. A lot of businesses were closed. And so like a lot of the streets were relatively clear, whatever. But then there was like these checkpoints and stuff. And so when Wahid picked me up, he just seemed a little stressed, like, about time and everything. My train left at 9. He picked me up at 8. We did hit some traffic and whatever. And it's just driving around Cairo. So the way I described it on Facebook was like, okay, remember the movie Days of Thunder where you get these cars and they're just literally driving like inches from each other at high speed. Okay, that's Cairo. Like these, like you see a car in front of you, they're driving, I don't know, 40, 50 miles an hour, and you're driving the same speed and literally inches away. And what's hilarious is like a lot of the cars just have little dents and scrapes all around them, just like stock cars would. And they're just like flashing lights and beeping and whatever. So I've been in these different cities where the traffic is just insane. So I'll just give you a couple of comparisons. So one is like Kathmandu in Nepal. It was probably the most insane traffic in terms of just like no rules at all. Like, I mean, if there's free space, even if you're driving in the oncoming lane, I mean, and I say lane as if there's like painted lanes or whatever, but it's like, you drive on it. The thing is that it's so congested or whatever. It seems like the speeds just don't get that high. So even though it's probably more chaotic, it doesn't seem as dangerous because it just, I don't remember the cars ever going that fast. And then there's like Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh City where it's just like scooters everywhere, and they're flying by, and you're trying to cross the street, and so you're taking your life in your hands when you're like crossing a street. But if you just keep going at a steady, predictable pace, like the scooters will just flow around you. Like you just don't want to make any sudden movements or like stop suddenly or like start going faster or start running or something like that. If they can kind of predict what you're about to do, they can just like anticipate it and go around you. And I did a couple of those, like, so crossing. So I had, when I went to the National Museum, like crossing the street, this one street, it was like Hanoi with the scooters, except it was cars, and they're going not slow. And you're crossing the street in the middle of, like, it basically be like crossing a highway, maybe not quite as fast, but like getting pretty close there, like crossing a major boulevard in a major city where cars are going like a certain speed and just like walking across it, you know, it's like that kind of thing. So what's different, it just seems like in Cairo is like, you know, there's people crossing the street, you know, you got the cars going at like sometimes high speeds, and then you got the random like donkey cart just trotting along, and then you got like, you know, at least you don't have, at least like not in Cairo, but in other cities in Egypt, you don't have like the farm animals and shit like in the middle of the road. But so we're driving around and it's nighttime and there's still like police presence out, and there's just like, we're trying to get to the train station, and I'm just like, holy shit, this is crazy. You know, and finally get to the train station, and Wahid parks, and I'm like, oh, I thought he was just gonna drop me off. But he was like he was making sure that I like got on my train, taking me to my exact seat and everything on the train. So that was super cool. He's a nice guy. So he grabs my big bag, I take the small bag, and we're just like weaving through all these people at the train station. So the train station itself was crazy and chaotic. Like there's, I don't know what's going on. There's like this crowd of people in front of the locomotive, and they're all like yelling at the engineer, and I, who knows what's going on. And then Wahid like yells something at him, and then they I don't know, then we like start walking through the station, we're like weaving in and out, and there's it's just this, what I kind of love about just travel sometimes is just some of the chaos. It's just, you just have to like embrace it. And then all the different types of people, there's like these like Muslim guys in tunics, and then these some women in like burqas or hijabs, and then other people that are look like businessmen, and then young people, and then there's like the random guy carrying like a sack of flour, and then somebody else like, you know, carrying like some random like auto parts or something, and then, you know, and just it's just crazy. And so I find Wahid leads me to, and I'm having trouble keeping up with him, but he leads me to the train car, and I sit in my seat and we shake hands, and we had like exchanged numbers so that he can come find me when I come back. Super nice guy. He just wanted to make sure that I got on the right train safely and everything. And yeah, so I took the train, and it was actually pretty comfortable. There were, you know, it's first class seating. They had sleeper cars, but I guess they're really expensive. So I basically popped one of my Unisom pills. But and what was the other thing? It just seemed like while I was sitting there, there's all this chaos, like people getting on and off the train, people arguing or debating about stuff. Like some guy just comes in and just he's like yelling something, and he just starts throwing these little. I couldn't really tell what it was, but it was like cellophane wrapped, like little. It looked like maybe games or puzzles. Like I remember seeing like something from the movie Cars. And he just starts throwing them in people's laps and going down the train or whatever. So I'm like, oh, well, he's just handing out games or something. But then he walks back up the car and just starts picking them back up again. So I guess it was like, if you want to keep it, you got to pay or something like that. I don't know. It was just a funny sales technique. Just to start flinging these things in people's laps, and then they got to hand you money, or else you're gonna pick it back up out of their lap or something. I don't know. It was weird. And then, I don't know. Just the whole scene. I wish I could like describe it in more accurate detail, because there were so many little. There was like 1,000 little details, and that's like any city like this that you go to. There's so much. There's so much stimulation that it's hard to really capture it. I mean, yeah, you could sit there with your phone and just video everything, but I don't even think that would fully capture just being immersed in it. So I was just highly entertained sitting in my seat, and so I bought some snacks. Oh, I realized my water bottle had fallen out, so I went and got like a Sprite and some cookies. And I was about to, like, so the train starts up, and I was about to go to sleep, and then this guy was like, do you want dinner? And I'm like, and my first thought was like, yeah, I want dinner. And so I'm like, how much is it? He's like, 75. And I'm like, okay, which is like, I don't know, I calculated it, and it was like less than $5 for dinner, and it ended up being like a pretty good dinner, like it was like rice with like chicken, and then there was potatoes, and then there was like this tahini sauce, and then there was like a little cake and some coleslaw. I mean, it was like a pretty good dinner, but I realized, like, I thought everybody was like ordering dinner, because I was kind of like trying to drift off to sleep when the guy just sort of like surprised me, and he just like, you want dinner? I'm like, yes, I want dinner, and like whatever, and then I didn't pay attention, and then I realized like I'm the only jackass on this car that's like ordered dinner. So I sort of start feeling bad. I'm sitting there just chowing down on this dinner, and like nobody else has any, and I don't know, I just my stupid irrational guilt feelings kind of popped up, but I thought that was a funny little anecdote. I caught a few winks and caught some Z's, and sorry this is kind of long, but I'm just trying to capture a lot of different little things and stuff. There's like bright light, so it was pretty hard to sleep, but I did the best I could. At least the seats were comfortable, and you could lean back a decent amount. And so we finally get to Luxor. I think the whole train ride was about 11 hours. So not the worst. I've been on much worse with like 14-hour bus rides in Turkey. So then this guy picks me up, and he's got the awesome, you know, Zachary Hoofman, which is, I think that should just be my new name from now on, Mr. Hoofman, the horse podiatrist. His name was Star, which I thought was cool. And, I'm going to save a part of the story for a separate podcast, just talking about, I'm going to call it the hustle, because I'm just going to save that part for a separate podcast. But, Star picks me up and takes me to this little tea shop, and we wait for a van, and then we transfer to the van, and then the van goes to one of these boats or floating hotels, which I'm on right now, to pick up the rest of our group for our group tour today. And so in that group, there were there was this family of four from Iraq, and they were just such a lovely family. And I only remember there was the father, the mother, and then a son and daughter. And the father was a physicist, and sorry, I don't remember their names except for Amir, which was the son that was a doctor. So there was father who's a physicist, the mother, the son who's a doctor, and then the daughter, I think her nickname was like Nana or Nona or something, and she was a student, and they were just such a lovely family. I kind of talked with them a little bit, and then there was these three American women from Houston, Texas, and they were like African American, but it turned out at least one of them was Egyptian American. Well, I got to talking with her. Her name was Ellie. There was Ellie, Lorraine or Laura or something, and then Celeste. And they're all these like three like beautiful African American women from Houston, Texas, and they were all just decked out and cool. I don't know, just their style was super cool. I just remember they could have been like a Destiny's Child or something like that. Like that's just my first impression of them. But so we went to the Valley of the Kings, where there's these tombs of these famous kings. So there's Tutankhamun, there's Ramses. So you basically pay for and you get to see three tombs, and they alternate the tombs. So the first one, I can't look it up. I can't remember. It starts with the M. The second one was Ramses the Ninth, and then the third was Ramses the Fourth. And then if you pay a whole extra fee, you can see Tutankhamun's tomb. But basically, our guide said, you know, all of the treasures have been taken out of it. So, but it turned out that his actual mummified body is in the tomb, which I did not know. And so I didn't go in it, but the Iraqi family went in, and so they showed me pictures of it. So I was talking to the family, and I was talking to Amir, and I was like hesitating, but I was like, so how's life in Iraq? And he's like, you know what? It's amazing. It's really good these days. It's really safe. And he was just saying how, like, things are, like, really have come back to normal. And, yeah, that there's been some holdover, you know, terrorist activity from sleeper cells or whatever. But he's like, you know, he made a joke. He said, yeah, I've heard from other Americans that I've met that there's places in America that are like more dangerous at night than Baghdad. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're probably right. they basically said, I was a little sheepish to be asking questions about the war and everything, but basically Amir said he was 7 when Saddam was overthrown. Now, so I don't know what that would make him now, but he's like a newly minted doctor, so you can kind of probably in his mid-20s, I guess. They basically said, you know, America coming in and toppling Saddam was the best thing that ever happened for Iraq. So they were very, like, positive about it. And they said, you know, it was, you know, Saddam was, like, treated like a god when he was in school. And I was like, yeah, but what about all the violence and all the you know, death? And he's like, you know, he's like, this is a terrible thing, but, you know, sometimes, you know, terrible things have to happen or whatever. So I was a little surprised that was their reaction, but it felt very genuine to me. And they were just, man, it was just like I almost got like a little, I don't know, like choked up. I hate to say it sound like schmaltzy, whatever, but just that, like, here's this like totally nuclear family that is from Iraq, and they like lived through the war and everything, and they're just like on vacation. They're like, we love Egypt, you know, the Egyptians. And he was saying how like the Egyptians are like the really friendliest, sort of funny people in the Middle East, and they've got like all the movies and music and everything. So it was just like here's this like totally normal family on vacation together, but they just happened to be from Baghdad, and I don't know, there was just something really poignant about that, like just like that they were just able to kind of like live their lives like any other like family. And granted, they're probably like a little bit more upper class than, or I don't know, whatever would be the equivalent of like upper middle class in Baghdad, but then the average person that probably doesn't have the funds to travel or whatever. But it was just like really cool to see. And I think, you know, we saw some really cool stuff. We saw the Valley of the Kings. We saw the Temple of Hashtaput, which was really cool, and then these other statues and stuff, or whatever. But I think it just, again, it just keeps going back to, like, you know, meeting people along the way. And it's the same thing for, like Giza and everything. Like, yeah, I saw some pyramids, and that was cool, but it was really, like, just the really casual, like, interactions with Omar and Magid and Mahmoud and the other people that I met, and then, you know, that just make it such a unique experience. And that's part of the reason why I want to do the podcast is just to capture some of these things while they're still fresh in my head. And I totally would have tried to do like an interview with them in the car, but I was just so wiped out and it was so hot today. And I was just like, just holding on by a thread, just from lack of sleep and the heat and everything, that I just wasn't up for it. So I came back to the boat or whatever. We had like lunch, and I just like crashed out. Like if you could like chug sleep like water or beer or whatever, like I was just, like, just, you know, I slept hard. So that's it for now. Then I'm going to do a follow-up podcast about some of the kind of negative side of traveling in a place like Egypt. You know, it's just part of the thing. So I'll just save that for a separate podcast. But thanks for listening, and Sweaty Yeti out. Or I think my brother suggested I should say, stay sweaty, my friends, or something like that. Like a little play on Dos Equis. So whatever sign out that you think is the best, but I'll talk to you all later.